Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Well, this time we're doing something a little different. We're diving deep into a single source.
Intriguing.
It's a 1937 science fiction novel called None But Lucifer by Lawrence Manning. And it takes the classic deal with the devil trope and flips it on its head.
Okay, I'm listening. How so?
So imagine, right? Making a pact with Lucifer, but instead of, the typical selling your soul thing,
Yeah.
you become his business partner.
Wow. That's a new one.
It's a pretty wild concept, especially considering when it was written, right smack in the middle of the Great Depression.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, people were desperate for like any way out of their suffering, right? Probably willing to consider anything.
Exactly. And the novel really taps into that anxiety. Like, what if the devil offered you a way to get everything you ever wanted?
Sounds tempting, but I'm sure there's a catch.
Oh, definitely. And that's where our protagonist, William Hale, comes in. This guy, he basically crafts his own misery, like on purpose.
On purpose.
Yeah.
Why would he do that?
Well, he deliberately refuses help, chooses to live in squalor, all to exploit how society views the poor.
So he's manipulating the system.
Exactly. He's not just a victim of circumstance, he's using it to his advantage. It's dark, but you gotta admit, it's pretty cunning.
Yeah, can't argue with that. Shows you what he's willing to do to get what he wants. But how does he even find Lucifer in the first place?
That's what I found so surprising. It's not some big dramatic scene or anything. He just stumbles across Lucifer running a detective agency.
Wait, what? A detective agency? That's unexpected.
Right. This all-powerful, infernal being just blending in with everyday life. It's almost funny.
Yeah, it is. But it also makes you think, doesn't it? Like, maybe hell isn't some separate place, but it's right here, woven into our systems and desires.
Totally. And the way Hale actually proves Lucifer's identity is just priceless. He pulls out a gun and it jams. Then a knife, and it just won't cut him.
It's like Lucifer's true nature is messing with the laws of physics.
Exactly. And get this, Lucifer, he just casually admits to it all. No big reveal, no dramatic denial. He's just like, yep, that's me.
So what's Hale's play here? What does he want from Lucifer?
He blackmails him, of course.
Blackmails the devil. Bold move. How does that even work?
Hale knows that Lucifer relies on human desire to keep his power going. So he uses his understanding of how people think and how society works to force Lucifer's hand.
Fascinating. So we're talking about a battle of wits here, not just some supernatural showdown.
Right. And this is where we get a peek into Lucifer's world, which honestly is way more bureaucratic than I expected.
Bureaucratic, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about filing systems and records, whispers that control stock markets, this whole hidden finger approach to influencing things. It's pretty creepy, actually. Okay, you got to explain that hidden finger thing. It sounds kind of ominous.
Basically, it means Lucifer doesn't directly control things. He just nudges people in certain directions, plants ideas, manipulates events to get the outcome he wants.
So he's less of a dictator and more of a master manipulator, pulling strings from the shadows. Definitely more insidious.
Exactly. It's like he's playing a long game and we're just pawns on his chessboard.
Chilling stuff. So, back to Hale, right? He's a man of simple desires. He wants wealth, possessions, the whole nine yards. He figures those things will make him happy. And at first, he gets it all.
The classic be careful what you wish for scenario. I bet it backfires spectacularly.
Oh, it totally does. But what's really interesting is how Hale's attitude towards death changes once he actually has things to lose.
That makes sense. When you've got nothing, what's there to fear?
Exactly. But now, with all this wealth and power, he becomes terrified of losing it all, of dying.
It's like his newfound wealth has actually increased his suffering. The more he has, the more he has to lose.
And amidst all this, he finds an unexpected connection with Gloria, who, at first glance, seems like your typical shallow socialite.
Oh, I see where this is going. She's not what she appears to be.
Not at all. Turns out she sees something in Hale beyond the wealth and manipulation. She appreciates his intelligence, his strength.
So there's a genuine connection there.
Yeah, it's a reminder that you can find love in the most unexpected places. But of course, with Hale, nothing is ever simple. He decides to try to make Gloria immortal, driven by love, but without thinking things through.
Uh-oh. I have a feeling that's not going to end well.
Well, you'll have to wait for part two to find out what happens. Let's just say, messing with immortality, especially when Lucifer's involved, rarely goes according to plan. Last time, we left off with Hale trying to make Gloria immortal. Big mistake.
Oh, yeah, huge mistake. I mean, any deal with Lucifer, you know there's going to be a catch.
And what's the catch this time?
Well, the spell works, kind of. But instead of making Gloria truly immortal, it binds her to Hale for eternity.
Oh, wow. So they're stuck together forever.
Forever and ever. And it doesn't exactly sound like a happily ever after.
Yeah, till death do us part takes on a whole new meaning when death's off the table, huh? Even if you love someone, being with them for eternity.
Yeah.
That's got to be a bit much.
It's like the ultimate test of compatibility. And the novel really digs into this whole idea of forced companionship. You know, how even love can turn into a burden when there's absolutely no escape.
Yeah, I can see that. So how does this play out for Hale and Gloria? Are they, like, constantly at each other's throats?
Well, it's more like a clash of personalities and desires, right? Gloria, she's eternally young, full of energy, wants to be out there experiencing everything.
And Hale.
Hale, he's still mortal, still has that introspective side, kind of yearns for some peace and quiet, time to think.
So it's like they're speaking different languages.
Exactly. And the novel gives us these really vivid examples of how this plays out, you know, in their everyday lives.
Like what?
Well, there's this one scene, right? Hale tries to take Gloria to the opera. Thinks she'll love it, all that high culture.
Oh, no, I can see where this is going.
She is bored to tears. Would much rather be at a jazz club or something.
Yeah, not exactly Hale's scene.
And then there are these endless bridge parties Gloria throws with all these socialites. Drives Hale crazy, all that empty chatter. He ends up hiding in his study, basically.
So it's this weird mix of tragedy and comedy, huh? Hale got everything he thought he wanted, but he's totally miserable.
It makes you think, right? Mm-hmm. About what happiness really is. It's not just about getting what you want. It's about finding meaning, connection, something deeper.
And sometimes even love can be a source of suffering if it becomes an obligation. It makes me wonder, was this Lucifer's plan all along? Did he know this would happen?
It wouldn't surprise me. Mm. Lucifer's a master manipulator, right? Mm. He knows how to twist our desires against us, how to make our good intentions backfire.
Kind of a chilling thought. And, you know, while all this is going on with Hale, there's this other storyline happening with the Burks. Remember them? Those kind janitors Hale tried to help at the beginning.
Yeah, I remember them. What happens to them?
Well, Lucifer, he decides to help them, too. He uses his powers to divert this huge inheritance their way.
He's messing with them now. You'd think coming into money would be a good thing.
You'd think, right. But it turns out to be a curse in disguise. Suddenly, they're ostracized from their community. All their friends and neighbors are suspicious of them, jealous.
So money really can't buy happiness. In fact, it seems like it just created a whole new set of problems for them.
It's like that old saying, more money, more problems. The Burks, they were happier when they had less. They had their community, their simple pleasures. Now they have all this wealth, but they've lost something precious.
It's a powerful reminder that happiness often comes from the simple things in life, the connections we have, the sense of belonging. And money can sometimes disrupt all of that.
Makes you wonder if Hale was looking for happiness in the wrong place all along, you know, focusing on material wealth instead of these deeper connections.
Yeah, it's a question that keeps coming up throughout the novel. Is happiness something you achieve, or is it something you cultivate from within?
Deep stuff. And, you know, on top of all this personal drama, there's this growing sense of unease in society. Like, Hale's entire hemisphere is gripped by this fear and uncertainty.
Oh, yeah. What kind of stuff?
Political gridlock, economic anxieties, everyone's paranoid and distrustful. Sounds kind of familiar, don't you think?
It's crazy how a book written back in 1937 can still be so relevant today. Like, Manning really tapped into something fundamental about the human experience, you know, that vulnerability to fear, that tendency to look for easy answers to complex problems.
So how does Hale respond to all this? Does he use his newfound power to try to fix things?
Well, he has this sort of epiphany, right?
Yeah.
Inspired by some conversations with Gloria's dad. He decides that the key to fixing society isn't material wealth, it's confidence.
Interesting. So instead of giving everyone more stuff, he tries to change how they feel.
Yeah, but he doesn't go for the subtle approach, you know, like building self-esteem or anything. He decides to use his power to instill this absolute, unwavering confidence in everyone.
Whoa. That sounds a little extreme. I mean, confidence is great, but too much of it can be dangerous, right?
Exactly. And that's where things really start to get out of hand. Well, we'll have to dive into that in part three. But let's just say, Hale's experiment has some pretty major unintended consequences.
Okay, so we left off with Hale basically pumping everyone full of confidence. What happens when you remove all doubt from a society?
Well, initially, it's like everything's on fast forward, the stock market's booming, but it's all based on, like, irrational exuberance, you know? No one's thinking clearly.
Yeah, everyone's just riding this wave of blind optimism. Sounds kind of fun, actually, but I'm guessing it can't last.
Nope. Not at all. It all starts to unravel pretty quickly. People are taking huge risks, making impulsive decisions. They've completely lost the ability to see danger, to assess consequences.
So are we talking like bad investments, reckless spending, that kind of thing?
Oh, way worse than that.
Yeah.
The novel describes this surge in accidents, crime. People are so sure of themselves that they just throw caution to the wind and it gets ugly.
It's like they traded common sense for confidence.
Exactly. And it's a good reminder that we need both, right? You need a balance of confidence and caution, ambition, and, you know, a little bit of healthy fear. Otherwise, things can spin out of control pretty fast.
So what's Lucifer's reaction to all this? Is he, like, reveling in the chaos?
It's funny, you know, because when he shows up again, he's not mad at all. He's actually impressed. Sees Hale's creation as this, like, masterpiece of torment.
Wait, how does that make sense? I mean, on the surface, it seems like things are going great, right? Everyone's
yeah.
confident, productive. Why would Lucifer be happy about that?
Because he understands the long game, right?
Yeah.
He sees that this blind confidence, it's ultimately a trap. It's a form of denial.
Denial of what?
Denial of all those deeper anxieties and dissatisfactions that are like part of being human. Everyone's so busy chasing after stuff, convinced that happiness is right around the corner, that they never actually stop to question if they're even on the right path.
It's like they're running in circles, chasing a mirage.
Exactly. It's the trap of consumerism, this idea that happiness equals having more stuff. But it never really works, does it?
Yeah, there's always something else to want, some other void to fill.
And the novel, you know, it really highlights the emptiness of all that. It's a pretty powerful critique of materialism, which honestly feels even more relevant today with social media and all the pressure to project this perfect happy image.
It's like everyone's trying to keep up with the Joneses, but the Joneses are miserable too.
Right. So Hale, trying to build this utopia, actually created this dystopia. Prosperous on the outside, but hollow and unhappy underneath.
So ironic. And he doesn't even realize it, does he?
No. He's convinced he's won, defied Lucifer, proven that confidence is all you need to achieve happiness.
But of course, it's all built on a foundation of sand, right? We talked about those risky investments, that unsustainable growth. Where does it all lead?
Well, where do you think? To a crash, of course. The whole system collapses. All that blind confidence leads to overproduction, crazy debt, and when the bubble bursts, everyone's left holding the bag.
So Hale's experiment backfires spectacularly. He tried to prove Lucifer wrong, and instead he played right into his hands.
Pretty much. And you know what happens to Hale in the end?
What? Tell me it's not good.
Lucifer. He's so impressed with what Hale accidentally created that he gets promoted. And guess who gets left in charge of this whole messed up hemisphere?
Hale. Seriously?
Yep. He basically becomes the warden of his own personal hell.
That's wow. Talk about poetic justice. Or maybe poetic injustice. He tried to climb the ladder of success, and it turns out it was leaning against the wrong building.
Exactly. It's a cautionary tale, you know, about ambition, power, and the danger of good intentions gone wrong. Hale's downfall is a reminder that we need to question our assumptions, think critically, and consider the bigger picture. Otherwise, we might end up creating the very problems we're trying to solve.
So it's a fictional story, but the message is pretty real. It's about the allure of quick fixes, the dangers of unchecked power, and the importance of thinking for yourself. What are your biggest takeaways from all this?
Well, for me, it's about remembering to question everything. Question your beliefs, question the systems you're part of, question the consequences of your actions. And, you know, happiness, it's not something you just achieve. It's something you cultivate, you know, through your choices, your relationships, your values.
It's a powerful message, and it's amazing how relevant it still is all these years later. None But Lucifer is a story that makes you think, makes you question, makes you look at the world a little differently. And honestly, I think that's the mark of a truly great book.
Totally agree. It stays with you, you know, makes you think about the choices you make, the things you value, the kind of world you want to live in.
Yeah. And it reminds us that the battle between good and evil, it's not out there somewhere. It's happening inside each of us in every choice we make every day.
That's a great way to put it.
Well, folks, that's our deep dive into None But Lucifer. Hope you enjoyed exploring the dark side of human nature with us. And until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.